we have not figured out how to get stable growth in a rapidly changing world. In my lifetime, the population of the world has tripled from 2-plus billion to 6 billion. The life expectancy of many, many people has almost doubled, and we now have an aging population. The war, World War II, is actually not hurt in the long run, but we have a strange situation now where the economically advanced countries like Europe and the U.S. have problems paying their bills, and where China and India, who started way back in terms of economic status, are catching up. China is now the world's number two economy, and very likely in 25 years will be on par with the U.S. That is a stupendous change if you look at the history. So that's one. The other is the problem with terrorism and general lack of people's interest in supporting organizational structures that make society function. A lot of people think that a mob in the street can run a country. Well, they can't, because they don't know enough about what needs to be done. And now these are very deep philosophical questions, but they're challenges for all governments who are awake, and ours surely is. And it's not clear to many professionals exactly what to do. And I think I'm quite confident that these two questions will absorb 80% of all government thinking in the U.S. and elsewhere.
Are we doing enough to address the root causes of terrorism? And are we thinking about addressing those root causes the right way? Or are we spending maybe, do you think, too much time addressing the symptoms and not addressing the actual causes?
That's a very good question, and I wish somebody knew the answer. I'm afraid nobody really does. The root causes that you hear about are poverty and political discrimination and such. However, most of the people who were involved in the 9/11 attacks were highly educated. Many came from wealthy families and so on. So there's something else going on. That's point one I want to make. The other point I want to make is that we've, in our attempt to protect everyone from all conceivable dangers, we have gone way overboard, I believe. I do a lot of traveling on airplanes still, and I used to do more, and I'm all in favor of making flying safer, but the number of real attacks that succeeded is very small. So the one man who was the shoe bomber, who was quite inept and didn't do very well, made us spend billions of dollars to respond to that. So I think there's a mismatch between threat and response. And in some ways, hard to define, we may be overreacting.
Part of the conversation that I don't think has been explored either is the concept that you say the shoe bomber was unsuccessful, and I agree he was within the particular episode that he tried. But if you connect it more broadly to the economic security piece that you mentioned earlier, he was actually maybe successful because he's caused us at a time where we really maybe don't have a lot of extra money to spend money in a way that may not necessarily have been our preferred priority before he tried his attack last year.
Greg, I agree completely. And a lot of people that I know about that are working on this and are trying to do better. But it's complicated. It's hard. And there aren't any simple solutions that I can think of.
longer term, do you foresee your two major trains of thought, the terrorism piece and the economic security piece, continuing to weave in together from time to time in the way that we just discussed, as with the shoe bomber?
That's one of the things I'm worried about. But let me get back to some ideas I worked on many years ago, which turned out to be successful, and one which did not. When I was at ARPA and when I was director, the most important, I made a lot of decisions. I spent a lot of money. I was involved in really important security issues like arms control and the Cold War and such. But the most significant decision I made in 1966, when I was just director, was to integrate and connect different computers and communication devices. I must say that at the time, nobody thought whether it could be done at all, but I decided we must try, and I spent relatively minimal amounts of money to do it. And what came out of that was the ARPANET and then the Internet and the web and everything we live with today that makes our lives what it is, mostly good, but some not quite so good. It was a stupendous gamble, not in terms of dollars. The dollars I put on the issues were in the millions of dollars, but not even 10 million in my time. Now, the total investment that the world made in this is billions and billions, but that was mostly private enterprise that did it. So the U.S. government, particularly NSF, had some critical roles in this. So we managed to do that, and in a sense, there was a fulfillment of a boy's dream I had. I wanted the universal library where everything could be read, it could be at hand. And we've got that now for all practical purposes. The other thing was I really wanted a magic carpet to go anywhere with a snap of the fingers. And while we don't have that, and we'll never get it quite the way the fairy tales describe it, we with online devices we can go anywhere and look at anything, look at streets, look at houses, look at people, look at what happened. And it's an extraordinary world. And that part was just hugely successful, way beyond what anyone could guess, though the guru of all of us was a fellow by the name of Licklider, whose vision we are just filling out.